Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for autumn semester 2015. Lecture 3, delivered on August 26, 2015. The title of this lecture is Special Topics, Interest Rates, and Securities.
Today, special topic, interest rates and securities. Begin with a nice little example. As I had told you, well, it's not quite this way so much anymore. But when the government borrows money, the way it does it, the way all corporations borrow money, and business entities, and even you, although you don't know it, what you're actually doing is selling a piece of paper. If you want to buy that house trailer that you can put in Decatur, the double wide, and in Decatur. I make fun of Decatur. You know, people say, my mom comes from Decatur. Well, I know. I saw her in a truck stop there. But easy, easy. Okay. But you want to buy that double wide, you're going to have to go to a bank and borrow the money. Borrowing is actually where you sell a bond to a bank. The bank buys it from you, and the price is what they lend you. So you are actually the issuer of the security. As a borrower, you are the issuer. The lender is the buyer of the security. Sometimes I'll say you wrote the bond. That means that you were the one who borrowed the money. And this is the same way it is with corporations when they want to borrow money. They are actually issuing bonds. They're selling bonds, and then the buyers are the ones who are lending them the money on the terms that are in the bonds, covenants, and agreements. Three types of debt securities, one way you can divide it up, is there are bills, notes, and bonds. Now, bills are less than a year, less than or equal to a year. If it's a bill, it's less than a year. Well, I got a bill in the mail. The company sent me a bill. Well, actually, all they're doing is printing up the bill that you had sold them. Well, I got a bill for my internet. Well, actually, yeah, you borrowed their internet service for a price, and now they're just reminding you with a memorandum about that debt that you owe them. But you were the issuer of the bill. A note is between 1 and 7 years. And bonds are any kind of a debt security that is more than about 7 years in duration. That's just how it works. I do so hope I still have a dollar bill. I do. Okay. Madam? What does it say at the top of this dollar right here?
Federal Reserve note.
What was that last word?
Note.
What does that mean?
Between 1 and 7 years.
It's a debt instrument. This is a debt instrument. And it's a note that would survive for between 1 and 7 years. So in other words, essentially what is happening is that the government borrows money. And the Federal Reserve funds some of that by printing up for the government these notes that are the government's borrowed money contracts. And then they transact like as a currency, as a fiat money. And it lasts between 1 and 7 years. What happens at the end of 1 and 7 years? When you borrow money, you pay it off, right? So how does the government pay this off? You know? It issues another one. It grinds this one up and then pays the people by having the Federal Reserve print another one or a couple of them. That's how, wouldn't that be nice if you could pay your bill that way? It's really cool. But that's exactly what this is. It's a debt instrument. The Federal Reserve prints these up on authority from the U.S. Treasury to represent debt obligations of the United States government that the Fed is funding. And when this one expires and the government has to pay it off, all the Fed does is just grind these up as they get them, and they last about, you know, a few years, grind them up and then just print new ones to replace them. That's how it works. So this is a note. So when we call it a dollar bill, that's actually, it's a dollar note. And in some countries, they do call them notes. In the United States, they call them bills, but technically they're notes. They have a life expectancy of 1 to 7 years before they kind of wear out. They get nasty in your pocket, and they get all grimy, and so they grind them up and give you new ones, print new ones out. But anyway, so the terminology, and so when you get a loan for a home, a mortgage would be a backed, something that's backing the borrowed money. But you're issuing, if you get a 30-year loan for a house, what you're doing is you're issuing a bond. The bank and you have made pre-arrangements for how the bond will work, the payments and all of that, to kill it off. And then you, and technically, the bank prints up, writes up the contract on your behalf. Then you sign it to represent that you are the issuer. Then the bank's loan officer signs it to represent that the bank is agreeing to buy this security from you. And the price that they're buying it at is the amount of the loan for the home you're getting. Sounds kind of complicated, but that's how it actually works. We don't really have to tell normal people, well, this is technically how it works, but that's the way it works. Okay. Now, in this whole thing here, the Treasury borrows money a bunch of different ways. And I'm going to use the Treasury as an example of this. Understand that corporations and the government don't borrow, pay off loans the way consumers do. With your consumer loan, you're going to borrow the money to buy yourself a car. You're going to get one of those little mini cars. It's a babe magnet. I know, you know. What is it, like an Aveo or whatever that is. You want one of those. So you are going to borrow the money, and each payment is going to pay off part of the loan as well as the interest on the outstanding balance. So by the end, you've paid off the whole thing. Corporate and government debt does not work that way. During the life of a corporate or a government bond, all they do is pay the interest, the coupon, as we call it. At the end, they pay one last coupon, the interest, on the outstanding debt, and they pay off the whole thing at once, the amount they actually borrow. So a corporation that borrows, issues a bond for $100 million at, let's say, 8%, well, over the life of that bond, they'll just be paying 8% of the $100 million every year, say it's a 30-year bond. And they'll pay that 8% of the $100 million every year for 30 years. And at the end of 30 years, they'll pay one last 8% on the $100 million, and then they'll pay the $100 million back to the lenders. That's how corporate and government debt works. In other words, the loan doesn't amortize over its life. But consumer loans, they amortize so that there's nothing left of it at the end. Okay, that's a normal one. The government issues one slightly odd little animal, which is a perfect example of a fundamental principle of finance. The government issues these one-year treasury bills. We call them T-bills. Now, these T-bills, essentially, the government says, in 1 year, I'll pay you back $1,000. If you will buy it now for a price less than $1,000. So your interest is basically what the difference is between what you buy it at and what you get, the $1,000 you get back. That $1,000 face value, that is almost always, unless I say differently, all corporate and government bonds have a face value of $1,000. They all do. $1,000. little thing to bring up here. Now, all of this is coming up right away in the book as well, but I want to bring it up to you in this special lecture so that I can go forward with something special in this lecture. Historically, financial news services, back in the old days with the newspapers, even into the 1700s, they printed up all these prices of bonds. But they didn't actually print the price. They printed the quote, which is a tenth of the price. So if you ever see a bond price, you're probably not seeing the price, you're seeing the quote, a tenth of the price. It amazes me that even people who imagined that they were going to be great investors didn't know this. I had a friend of mine some years back. He saw some corporate bonds. They were quoting, he saw quotes around 98 on this one. So he bought 10 of them. He nearly had a heart attack when he saw that his brokerage account had been dinged for $9,800. They were $98 each. No, that was the quote. The price of them is 10 times that. He didn't know that. So oftentimes you'll see me talk in terms of quotes. I come from the brokerage world, so you'll hear me talk in quotes. If I say, give me a quote, you give it to me as a tenth of the price. If I say, give me the price, just give me the price. But anyway, that kind of starts us off here. The government issues an odd animal, a one-year bill that has a price less than $1,000. And in 1 year, you get $1,000. So in other words, if you were to buy it at a quote of 98, that would be $980. So you get $1,000 back in 1 year. And so your interest is the $20. That's how these work. Okay. That sets the stage. Back in the day, auctions, the government would literally hold a treasury auction. When they needed to borrow money, they would literally have different pieces of paper out on a table, and the rich investors who were into lending money to the government to make a little bit of a return, very safe return, remember, you must note, they would go and they would buy the paper, and that was lending the government money. Well, a T-bill auction would be short-term borrowings by the government. Cash management kind of money. So you might have a T-bill auction, solely T-bills, and they'd be out on a table, and rich people, rich companies, rich trust funds, whatever, rich investors from around the world would go up to the table and buy some of them for a price less than $1,000, and then in a year they'd get $1,000 back. So with that in mind, we'll have ourselves an old-style auction. I am Mabel, the auction cashier, and you are coming in for your very first purchase of a T-bill at an auction. So you're wandering around looking at the T-bills, you know, deciding which one's for you. And so I come, well, hi there, young man. Aren't you a rock-solid piece of beef? Yes, indeed. My goodness. Are you here to buy a T-bill? Would you like to buy a T-bill?
What can you offer me?
Well, never mind what I can offer you. What can you do for moi?
Can you afford it?
My God, back in the day, I used to travel with the Dallas Cowboys. Anyway. So you'll get $1,000 back in a year. What do you want to buy it for today? Oh, give me a price. What do you want to buy it for? What do you want to buy it for, though? Remember, you're going to get $1,000 back in a year. So you've got to buy it for less than that so that you make some interest on it. Okay, so what do you want? What are you offering me for it? Half? Are you out of your friggin' mind? What the hell? I may be easy, but I'm not stupid. Asshole. Say 975, for God's sake.
I'd say like 980.
Well, take that. Earl! Bag one, T-bill, 980. Drag it through the garden. Okay? So what has happened is this. The price he paid was $980. The face value, what's the face value of every debt instrument, unless I say differently? $1,000. In 1 year, he's going to get $1,000. So the dollars in interest he will earn will be 20. And so now we're ready to do the magic. Let's figure out the yield on this. The yield. How much interest did he make? How much did he invest? Here's the trick. Do not ever put $1,000. There's a temptation. I will even have a multiple choice answer if you put $1,000. That's not what he invested. He invested $980. Now, we can now figure out the yield on it, which would be 20 divided by 980, and then times it by 100. So his yield is 2.04%. 2.04%. That's how you figure out a yield. So if you could do that, you have just done your first bond yield calculation, and you can now put that on Facebook tonight. Yeah, I can do bond yield calculations. Who's bad? I'm bad. It's better than that crap that people put up. You ever notice the people with all the words of wisdom in those posters? They're the ones who are the most messed up on Facebook. Anyway, okay. Well, a year passed. Here you are at the auction the next year. Well, there you are again. So you were satisfied. You got your $1,000, and now you're back again for one. Well, that's very nice. You still look so good, but you never bring a girl with you. I mean, your name wouldn't be Jared, would it? Too soon? Too soon, yeah. Okay. I know, kindergarten hasn't let out today yet. Here we go. Well, you are. Shut up. You want to go again, okay? We're going to do another round, okay? Well, now you look around the room and you notice that the last time there were a lot of people there buying T-bills. You had to grab one. But this time, there's not a lot of people around buying T-bills. As a matter of fact, there are just a few, you know, Arabs and maybe one or two people from the People's Bank of China, but it's not a lot of business. So I've got those T-bills there on the table. Well, you want to buy one. What do you want to buy it for?
What if I say 980 again?
I would say that you're out of your mind because I'm desperate. I'm not selling them. If they're not selling, what are you going to do? If my artwork isn't selling at a festival, what am I going to do? I'm going to slash my prices like a mofo, okay? I promise you, I'm going to slash. You see that there is not, the demand has slackened off. So that the supply has stayed the same, but the demand isn't there. I got to sell those because I can't let the lights go out at the Pentagon. Because they already went out when those hackers came in and knocked them out. So you can take me at a lower price. Go ahead. Oh, will you stop it? Let's try 960, for God's sake. You're not ready to be a trader yet. Earl, bag one, 960. What's the face? What is he going to get in the year? $1,000, always. So this time, how much interest did he earn? $40. So now the yield becomes 40 over what? 960. Yes. So now we calculate the yield again. 40 divided by 960, 4.17. percent. I have just shown you an example of one of the most basic fundamental principles of finance. What happens, all other things being held constant, when the price of a security goes down, what happens to the yield?
It goes up.
You should get that tattooed on you. Seriously, there are a couple of good places that give great ink. You should have that tattooed on your arm. Price and yield are inversely related. You're being attacked by a finance gang on Market Street. You show them that tat, and you're down with them. Good. You got it? Price and yield are inversely related. So when prices go up, yields go down. When prices go down, yields go up. That's what makes it so that when you invest in bonds, if those prices of those bonds go down, that's bad for your investment. But new investors coming in will buy them because the yields are better on them. So this is one of the most fundamental principles of all of finance. Is that, and it's one that is manipulated and used by the Federal Reserve, this inverse relationship. So if I wanted yields on Treasury bills to go down, I would probably try to drive their prices up. And the way you would drive prices of bonds up would be to demand them. So if the Fed wanted to make the yields on T-bills, which are sort of like a base for a lot of interest rates, if the Fed wanted to stimulate the economy, make interest rates fall, they would probably go in and aggressively, with billions of dollars, buy T-bills in the open market. The effect of that buying would be to drive the prices of the T-bills up, which would push their yields downward. Conversely, the Fed keeps talking about, well, we've got to claw back the money supply. We've got to slow down the economy. They're kind of chicken to do it. But at the same time, sooner or later, they'll do it. When they do it, the way they would do it to drive interest rates up through the T-bill process, driving T-bill yields up, is they would probably flood the market with T-bills in their inventory. They buy them all the time from the government. That's how the Fed lends the government money. They would drive the prices of T-bills downward by flooding the market with a massive supply of them. And by the supply goes up, price goes down, yield goes up. That's how the Fed executes open market operations. I'm going to go through it in detail here in a minute. But it's kind of like a complicated logic in a way, but at the same time, this is the way the economy is being driven, day in, day out, 24/7, this is what they're doing. I'm not talking about trickles of money. I'm talking about oceans of money and T-bills flowing back and forth between the domestic trading desk and the open markets and the banks. This is again, one of the things where you are separating from the common person who has no idea this is happening. The whole economy is being driven by these ocean-level currents that are moving at the behest of the Federal Reserve and other central banks. Now, let me show you how it happens in practice here. And again, this should have been a heavy subject in macro, but in your macro economic section of 105. But my experience has been that it's just like not there, or if it is there, it's not detailed enough for what we need to know in finance. Now, the Federal Reserve System has a bunch of different committees, but the most important is what is called the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee. The Federal Open Market Committee. And that's in that the text of that link that I gave you, that I passed along to you. It's in ReggieNet, and also I sent it to you as an announcement. Now, the FOMC comprises the seven governors of the Federal Reserve and five district bank presidents. The governors are permanent voters on the FOMC. The five bank presidents, one is permanent, four have two-year terms, rotating two-year terms. The one who is permanent is the president of the Bank of New York, what we call the Empire Bank. The reason he is permanent is because what the FOMC says to do is done by the New York Bank at what is called the domestic trading desk of the Empire Bank, the New York Fed. Now, I'm not talking about, when I say domestic trading desk, I'm not talking about one of those things that you would build from solder, you know, put together. I'm talking not a DIY. I'm talking about a desk in the sense of floors of traders who take their orders from the manager, the desk manager, who takes his or her orders from the FOMC. The FOMC has to decide, are we going to expand the economy or are we going to contract the economy? We would expand the economy if the economy is sluggish. We would contract the economy if the economy was burning too fast and inflation was starting to show up. So let's say that we are in 2008. The crisis has hit. And suddenly the Fed, after those years when it was clamping down on M1, suddenly they realize, oh, I guess we shouldn't have been throttling the throat of the economy the way we were by not letting M1 grow. So quietly, no one ever knew, really. It was too complicated to explain in the popular press. No one knew that the Fed was so close to being one of the responsible parties for what happened by throttling M1. So the Fed quietly convened the FOMC right there and then when the crisis became known in September of 2008. The FOMC met and they voted, oh yeah, we're going to expand that money supply like you wouldn't believe. We're going to crank the money and pour it into the economy. The problem is, now do you remember 2008? What were you about? Yeah, 14. Now, do you remember having money fall down on you from the sky? Didn't either. Nope, didn't happen. The Fed doesn't give us money. It gives the banks money. And then the banks put that out into the economy. Well, the Fed said, expand. So the Empire Bank president communicated the will of the governors to the domestic trading desk at the bank in New York City. Flood the economy with money. Just pour it at the economy. So the domestic trading desk sent the orders out to the traders, the floor traders. Sit there with their, and let's expand one of them. you, woman, are a traitor. Now, I'd be a little bit facetious about this, but it's actually close to the truth. In your desk, on one side, you have just piles and piles of government T-bills. And in the other side of your desk, you have piles and piles of cash. And on your desk, you have a telephone and a file of phone numbers. Banks. Now, here I am. I am a bank out here in the real world. Now, I have to maintain Tier 1 capital. Capital that is very safe. I have to have enough of it so that no matter what happens, my bank would survive. So I could have some risky investments based upon my charter and all of that and the rules and regulations. But I must maintain a certain level of Tier 1 capital. And there are only two things that are safe enough to be considered Tier 1. In my vault, I have T-bills and I have dollar bills. They are both highly liquid, highly safe. Neither of them would default ever. Well, I've heard the government can default on its debt. No, it can't. The government will always pay it off. It will pay it off by, it can just print more money to pay it off. That's what it often does. And if we get tired of doing that, we'll just invade another country and take its stuff. Well, it works. It works for everyone. So, you talk to me. I'm the bank president. You want me to accept dollars. I have something that you could buy, and it would put money into my account. What is it that I have there that you could buy? Bingo. You call me, and you offer me you say, I want to buy your T-bills. Ring, ring. Hello. Go ahead. Go to hell. Click. You call me back. Ring, ring. Hello. How much you want to sell them to me for? Say $960. $960. Go to hell. I like my T-bills. Ring, ring. Hello. Oh, well, I guess so. Cool. What happened? Because she was trying to flood the market with T-bills. She was demanding T-bills. I'm sorry, she was demanding T-bills. When you want something really bad, you'll offer price going up until I say yes. But you tell me, as the price was going up on those T-bills, what was happening to the yields on them? Bingo. You just saw how the Fed drives the interest rate. By demanding the T-bills, by increasing the demand for T-bills, what happened was that she drove the price of them up. Price of the T-bill went up, so the yield went down. As yields on T-bills go down, interest rates that are based on the T-bills will slide down too, stimulating the economy. So you bought a T-bill and put it into your inventory. So I don't have any more, but I have the money in its place. And here's where the second leg of this game comes in. You see, because if you remember from my last lecture, I told you that banks have their money in this vast reservoir called the federal funds market. This is all of the money taken together of banks. And you can borrow in this market at the federal funds rate. Banks can borrow from each other at the federal funds rate. So you see, by the Fed buying that T-bill, the Fed has added extra dollars to the federal funds market. Which means that even though the Fed can't set the federal funds rate, it's a free market rate, by, if we had the demand and the supply of T-bills, and here we have the federal funds rate, the rate at which banks charge each other, the original equilibrium was at federal funds rate 1. By putting more dollars into it, the supply of federal funds goes out and the federal funds rate goes down. So the Fed, even though it doesn't set the federal funds rate, by its open market operation, pushing dollars into the federal funds market, the Fed actually can cause the federal funds rate to go toward a target it has. It can set the discount rate. It can target the federal funds rate. It can't set the federal funds rate, but it can target it. And the way it moves toward the target would be, in this case, to put more supply of lendable funds into the federal funds market, which drives the federal funds rate downward. That's how the Federal Reserve stimulates the economy. The economy has more dollars in it for banks to lend out. Treasury bill yields have fallen, so interest rates based on T-bill yields go down, and interest rates based upon the federal funds rate go down, because all of these are being suppressed by the Federal Reserve. Now take it the other way. Let's suppose that now, where we are right now, actually, the Fed... The economy was fragile after 2008. Think about this. You had a very bad breakup, okay? A really bad breakup.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you want to get back on your feet, but you're scared. You don't want to commit. So it's going to be hard to get you back out there. Come on, man, let's go out and, you know, let's do something great tonight. You know, let's go bowling, you know. Yeah. But you just don't want, you're afraid to. And that's where the American economy was for a long time after 2008. I mean, there was, he is a fragile man. Look at this. This is a flower. And... there's got to be a time, though, when you're driving along and you've got the radio on and Barry Manilow is playing. And I'm ready to take a chance again, ready to go to hyperinflation right now. And that's it. So you see, there comes a time when the economy begins to have that sense that the overhang of liquidity is beginning to cause inflationary pressures. The economy is growing at an aggressive rate, and it's scary that it might be an inflation kind of propulsion system in it. And so that's where the Fed is now. The Fed says, we've been adding liquidity by this open market operation mechanism for so long. This has got to be causing trouble down the road. And they start hinting and whispering, we're going to start contracting the money supply. We're going to turn it around. But every time they do that, the markets just, like you, as soon as I say, we got to get you out there with, you know, let's two lanes. That's all I ask, you know, a couple of lanes of bowling. You start crying. Okay? And you pick up this picture of, you know, I said, you keep a picture of Godzilla, and you say, that was my girlfriend. Oh, dude, I didn't know. Jeez. Okay. Yeah. But here's the thing. Sooner or later, we've got to do it. But when we do it, it's going to have, the Fed knows that it could very well punch us right back into a recession. And that might not be the coolest thing in the world, especially the Fed has been accused many times, and with good reason, of deliberately affecting presidential elections by monetary policy. If it was a president the Fed, wanted in there, then they would boost the economy with open market operations. If it was a Fed, if it was a president they didn't want to get reelected, they would kind of help the economy teeter back in, teeter into a recession. There are a number of papers have been written showing the curious pattern that way. So the Fed is a little sensitive to that kind of accusation. So if they're going to act, they probably are going to want to act very soon. Otherwise, they're going to be accused of driving the economy into a recession right during an election year in next year in 2016. So they're going to act to contract money supply. They're probably going to have to do it pretty quickly. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. Let's say that the Fed does say, the open market committee says contract. The Empire Bank president communicates it to the Empire Bank domestic trading desk. And the manager of the desk sends the orders out, get that money out of those banks. Get that money out of those banks. So here we have a desk trader. Again, T-bills in the drawer on the left, dollar bills in the drawer on the right. And here I am, Mr. Bank President. And my tier one capital, T-bills in the vault, dollar bills in the vault, actually in the federal funds market, but you know, I can get them whenever I want. Okay, so. We're all good. You're the trader. You need to get me to give up dollar bills. Okay? You've got to claw them out of my greedy banker hands. What do you have that I would give them up for in your desk? You have those. You could sell them to me. You could sell me T-bills. And I'd give you dollars for them. Right? Okay, so call me up on the phone. I want you to try to sell me T-bills. Ring, ring. Hello. Go to hell. Ring, ring. What do you want? How much are you asking for a T-bill? What do you want for a T-bill?
$1,000.
No, don't say $1,000. Say something a little less than $1,000. Can I get only $1,000 back? That would be a zero interest rate. Say something a little less.
$960.
Go to hell, Clay. You see, you offered me a price. I'm not going to buy that for $960. That crap? That's treasury bill crap. So you call me back. Ring, ring, hello. Go to hell. Ring, ring.
900.
Ooh, yeah, uh-huh. You remember, are you old enough to remember those old commercials for Ronco Veg-O-Matics? And if you order before midnight, we'll sell you a Ronco Veg-O-Matic. It slices it, dices it, makes julienne fries. Now, isn't that amazing? Call 1-800-215-5555 for your Ronco Veg-O-Matic and Popeil Pocket Fisherman today. Order now. Never mind, go back. Okay, I said yes. So what happens is that I pay you a dollar, the money, and you send me a T-bill. What happened when she was flooding the market with an extra supply of T-bills? What was the price doing? And what does that mean the yield was doing? Perfect. You see? They're clawing liquidity. I won't have as much money in the federal funds market to lend out. I'll have to stop lending to businesses. The price of T-bills was going down, which means their yields were going up. So any kind of interest rate that's based on a T-bill goes up, which slows down the economy. And one last thing. Here we go with that federal funds market again. Fed funds market, you had all this money in there, but I just gave some of that money to the Fed, so it's gone. So what has happened in the federal funds market is that if this is the federal funds rate, we had the demand and the supply of lendable funds for an equilibrium federal funds rate one. Suddenly, you've cut off some of that money. You've taken it, you put it into, have you ever seen those bags of shredded money they give you at the Fed? They'll give you a little bag of shredded money. You tore that money up, you just shredded it. And so, in other words, the supply of federal funds has gone down, so the federal funds rate goes up. Banks have to pay more to each other for federal funds. Again, although the Fed can't set the federal funds rate because it's a free market rate, it can move it towards a target. So there you go. The Fed, the way it contracted the money supply through these open market operations was effectively they drained liquidity from the banks, and they also, at the same time, drove up interest rates. The T-bill rate, they drove the yield on that up. They drove up the federal funds rate through draining the liquidity out of the federal funds market. That's how the Fed does it. Day in, day out, year over year, the domestic traders are moving money in and out of the markets. This is how they do it, to stimulate the economy and suppress the economy. Here are the two things about this, though. Open market operations are undeniably the most common tool of the Fed. Powerful tool. It's how they control the short-run economy. In the long run, the economy kind of has its own mind, but in the short run, this is how they control it. Back in the end of the 1990s, in the last years of the 1990s, and into the year 2000 and 2001, the federal government was running budget surpluses. The federal government was no longer borrowing money. The federal government borrows money by issuing treasury securities, treasury bills, treasury bonds, treasury notes. But if the federal government is no longer borrowing money, then there are no longer any treasury bills out there because they will all have matured within a year. The notes will be expiring, so the Fed doesn't have those for open market operations. There were virtually no bonds out there to begin with, treasury bonds. So as we went into the 21st century, the first year of the 21st century, the Federal Reserve no longer had the instrument it had to have for open market operations. The Fed, as a playa in the economy, had been taken off the field completely. It had no T-bills to play the open market operations game. Now, do you understand why the Fed chairman in 2002, Alan Greenspan, said, "Oh yeah, there's a horrible recession. We have got to cut taxes for the longest and deepest cycle in American history. Oh yeah, we got to do that. It's a serious recession." There wasn't a recession, so why would he have said that? Because that was the one way that he could cause the deficits to start up again, so that the government started selling T-bills, so that the Fed could be in the business of running the economy again. That was why the Fed stepped in, knowing damn well it wasn't happening. They stepped in and said, "There is a recession, and it is so bad that we have got to do massive, massive tax cuts." Because that was the only way that they could see to get that federal budget deficit to start up again, so they had T-bills. They were out of business. There were no open market operations. From about 99 to 2001, they were trying to use corporate paper, but it wasn't really working. It was just that there was no power of the Fed anymore. You have no power here. You're done. Well, there's another part to it, too. Let me give you another interesting take on this. After 2008, The Fed got really scared and was a very big participant in trying to boost the economy, get it back to life. This was under Chairman Ben Bernanke, old Uncle Ben, as we call him. He was a yes man for everything, and he was a pleasant enough guy. But after 2008, the Fed wanted to try to help get the economy back on its feet because we were in the worst recession since the Great Depression. So one thing that the Fed did was they lowered the discount rate to the point where it was virtually zero to try to get banks to borrow money from the Fed discount window so that those banks could lend it out. Well, the banks were more than happy to borrow that money, take that money. But what they did was they just made investments in foreign securities. They didn't lend it to businesses and to people. They said, oh, there's a credit crisis. We can't risk lending money to companies and people. There's a credit crisis. Well, that was maybe there wasn't, but they were creating it. And all the time, they were taking this free money and they were investing it in high yield securities of all kinds that were certainly not helping the American economy. That was one of the big reasons that the economy struggled so long to pull out of the recession because of this quote unquote credit crunch that was going on. But then there was another nasty thing that was going on too, another really nasty thing that was going on. Now, this one's going to be hard for you to grasp at first. I promise you, if you can understand this, you should have your PhD in economics. But I'll show it to you, and you'll get the idea of what's going on. The Fed was expanding the economy through open market operations and the discount rate. And also, I think it shaved a little off the required reserve ratio, but I can't say that for sure. But it was definitely using open market operations to flood money into the federal funds market. So when it flooded money into the federal funds market, the prices of security of T-bills went up, so their yields went down. Okay? Well, that's all well and good. But then, because the government was running such massive budget deficits, I mean, it was paying for two wars, paying for a lot of entitlements and all that, all kinds of interest on obligations. And the government, the Treasury, was borrowing money just hand over fist. At a Treasury auction, they would just put tons of paper out on the table. Well, when they put tons of paper out on the table, of course, that would increase the supply of T-bills. What happens when the supply of anything goes up? What happens to its price? Bingo. The supply, every time the Treasury ran an auction because of those massive budget deficits, it would put Treasury paper out on the table for auctions. When that supply, in other words, every couple of weeks, the supply of Treasury paper went up. Of course, because at those auctions, the supply went up, the price of Treasuries went down, which caused their yields to go up. So what the banks did was this. Oh, just a couple of weeks ago, the Fed paid us for a bunch of Treasury bills we sold to them. So they take that money and they go to the auctions at the lower price and buy more Treasuries. But then the Fed would come back in with another open market operation execution, driving the prices up, and so then the banks would sell the Treasuries back to the Fed at the higher price. And then, of course, as the Fed bought those, it put more money into the federal funds market for the banks to pay for those Treasuries. And so then, at the next auction, where the Treasury put paper on the table, the prices would go down again because the supply would go up because the government was borrowing money again. The supply would go up, price would go down. And so then the banks would come in and buy at the auctions at the low price. And then they would wait for the Fed to come and buy their Treasury paper at the high price. And then once the Fed had bought at the high price, they would hold the money until the next Treasury auction, where the price would go down again, and they'd buy more paper and wait for the Fed to drive the price up so they could sell it to the Fed at the high price, take more money from the Fed, and then wait for the next Treasury auction where the prices were collapsing again because the government was borrowing huge amounts, supply was going up strongly, and they would just keep this cycle going, making millions of dollars on every cycle of it. That was the primary reason the banks were not lending money to people and businesses, is because they had this going on. It was like a perpetual money engine for the banks, because all they had to do was hold the T-bills and wait for the Fed to buy them. They'd take the money the Fed bought them with and wait for the next Treasury auction where the prices would collapse. They would buy the cheap Treasury paper at the auction and then wait for the Fed to buy it in an open market operation at a higher price. Over and over again from 2008 until they're still doing it. But they aren't doing it as strongly as they did. That was why there was this credit crisis kept going. That's why the economy struggled and foundered for so long, was simply because the banks really didn't have money to lend to grow, to get the economy back on its feet. They were using it for this pretty much guaranteed money engine. That should jade you enough for today. That's all I have for you. Go home.